One of the things that I so admired about Judith, and that I think we all have to remember, is that she pushed us always to connect theory to practice. And for those of us who are practitioners, we have to be reminded of theory, and it seems to me that you theorists in the audience should always remember that there has to be an effect. And Judith was located just in that point where those two streams came together. So I want to start by asking a couple of the panelists some questions about practice, and then maybe we can move to theory as well. And I'm interested in a few very, very small things, just to start off. One is when Warren talked about the project that he was invited into the AGO to work with Judith on, that is the proposal to work with the science and math teachers and to bring them into the content of the art museum. I'm wondering how, Warren, you then evaluated whether it worked. What were your criteria that then led you to say, this was a great idea, and I was thrilled that Judith responded the way she did, but how did you then assess whether or not the project was successful, whether there was something, well, just that.
Yeah, that of course is always a difficult question, and has something to do with the logistics of teaching. And in fact, that project with the math and science teachers that year was only made possible by the fact that we were running our classes in 6-hour blocks, and so we were able to spend an entire day at the AGO. But one of the things I think that, and I can say a number of things about the criteria for evaluation, because this was something that Judith and I talked about in our planning process, and in fact tried to build that possibility of getting some feedback about what had happened into the 6-hour block of time that we worked with. I think the first thing is that there was incredible resistance on the part of the teacher candidates to come to the art gallery. For them, what does the art gallery have to do with math and science? And I think it was really quite remarkable for Judith to note that the art gallery was filled with math and science, and immediately took us back to the 16th century in her trying to organize a number of images for us to see in a number of sites within the heterotopia of the gallery, that she took us to these places where in an earlier moment of modernism the difference between an artist and a scientist or a mathematician did not exist. In fact, that these subject positions, if you will, were all located in one person, that the scientist was the artist, that the mathematician was the scientist, and that they all were engaged in notions of art. And she took us directly into thinking about notions of depth of field and perception and how these things had been developing historically. And I think that these things were quite remarkable for the students, because they had never thought, people who are interested in teaching young people math and science, that art has anything to do with these things. I mean, we had long discussions during that day about the notion of the science of paint and the various kinds of experiments and debates among artists and scientists that had to do with the nature of the materials that they worked with, paper, cloth, material, frames, location. All of these kinds of things were really quite central to the discursive area that Judith brought us into conversation with. And so it was quite a lot, in fact, for one day, this kind of talk, this, you know, a notion of, you know, an educator and curator within. I know that Judith was quite always insisting that I not call her a curator, because that wasn't what you called an educator in the art gallery, but I always insisted on calling her a curator of education, because I thought she was really organizing a kind of not just an experience, but setting up you know, and locating a set of objects for us to contemplate and to consider and to think about. She brought us right from the 16th century right up to, you know, some contemporary art. I can't recall the name of this piece. There was a big box in the gallery at that time, and it had a big magnet in the center, and it sort of held a lot of pieces of metal onto it, and we sort of ended there, I recall, having some conversation about magnets and magnetism and these kinds of things. I think at the end of the day, we tried to set the students off to sort of think about some of the areas that they had seen and to try to bring those observations that they made and that Judith herself had made into their own thinking about what it might mean to teach about some of these things in the context of their school, or even to return with a group of students to sort of explore some of these activities. And the assignment that we gave them was, in fact, to do some curriculum work around returning to the art gallery with the students. Now, one of the things that we realized, of course, and I realized as a course director in developing, you know, the longer idea of the course, was that I did not allow time to debrief. And I think this runs counter to the idea of the museum itself, because the museum is a site of contemplation, a site of time. I think when we go to the museum, in fact, we are trying to slow time down. For the most part, I think that's what we might try to think of the museum as a place where we slow down and we engage in both looking and looking away, in order to look away from the things that we ordinarily do, to look at something else that might enable us to return to the thing that we ordinarily do in a different way, and with a different kind of interest and a different kind of perspective. So I think, for the most part, in terms of evaluation, I've been able to come out of that experience not always having the opportunity of 6 hours to bring students to the art gallery to engage in these kind of activities, but to work more on this question of allowing more time for people to think about the images and objects that we might work with. And I've also sort of changed my teaching to, you know, the god-awful activity of teaching in the summer, to allow time for longer periods, 4, 5, 6 hours, where we can take students in education down to the ROM, or to the Multicultural History Society, or to the AGO, or to other places, where we can actually spend time working with the educators in these sites, allow ourselves the time to walk around and take in what we might see, and also the time to contemplate and to talk about what the experience was like and how we might fold that experience back into what we do outside of these institutions, in schools and community centers and so forth. So I think there's one thing that we've learned, or I've learned from this process, is to give more time, and to give more time to this notion of assessment and evaluation, an assessment or evaluation that should actually come from the products, curriculum products that you will, if you will, or pedagogical products, if you will, that the students I work with in education might produce.
Just a housekeeping point. I don't know what it says in your schedule, but we're not actually going to take a break. We're going to go straight till 12:30. So the way we've done it is there's tea and coffee and stuff out there, and if you'd like to, and we won't take it personally, you should just get up and go and do that, because our feeling is at this point, if we were to take a break, you know, it would be hard to get us back in order to take the lunch break. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to put Bruce Grenville on the spot a little bit to talk about the issue that he raised, which is collecting, which has been relatively absent in these discussions. And he does talk about that as an issue in museum practice, which, in fact, Peter White raised it by saying that there are histories in our collections that the organization of our museums don't allow us to mine. I'm wondering if Bruce can talk a little bit about that, specifically from the point of view, Bruce, of the sort of thoughts you have as you build the collection at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
Certainly. I think that, well, I raised it in that those remarks I made, but that the growth of the collection is something that's often unconsidered, and in retrospect, certainly, as Dot is proposing with her archive, can be mined and reread and read against the grain and sort of reconfigured in different kinds of ways. And that's something perhaps that museums don't do very well. They don't assess what they have, read against it in order to reconfigure both the institution but also the histories that have been written within that. And then the other thing I think that is a big issue that, again, is often unthought is then what is the role of continuing acquisition in the museum, and how do we both relate that to the collection but also to the need to tell an ongoing story in a way of production within the community but also a community in relation to other communities as well. So I've worked often in regional institutions, and those regional stories that need to be collected and told, but also need to be told with works like the acquisition of Terry Atkinson's work that comes in and is an intervention into the collection, and yet allows us in a certain kind of way, I think, to take that term again, to look away, to look back as well on that work and to see it reconfigured. So I think it's an undermined in both senses of that word, underutilized resource, but also one that is undermined by the institution in itself, in the sense that it doesn't give the resources to the collection, and yet it will become the archive that in the future that tells all the stories that can be told. So it's a I think unthought really, and I leave it to us to start to think those questions, because temporary exhibitions hold so much weight in our programming that if I had to calculate the disparity in our annual budget, I of course would be horrified, and you would be even worse horrified. So.
Thanks. I'm wondering if Joan could talk a little bit about interventions. She had made the point that interventions, well, I'm going to paraphrase by saying don't leave an actual change in practice within the institution. They sort of come in and leave. And then she cited Springs as being somewhat different. She didn't necessarily say it in those terms, but she did separate Springs' project at the ROM as different than other, quote, interventions. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that on the basis of whether you felt that Springs actually changed practice at the Wear Ontario Museum, or on what terms would you talk about it being different?
Okay, well, I think that the notion of an intervention into an institution, into an existing set of practices, methods, models, usually requires some sort of a surprise element, some kind of a shift of perspective, some kind of alteration. And so I'm wondering at what level things can get co-opted and tamed. And so I think that we're always seeing the strategy shifting on the part of how someone might conceive of an intervention. But I think that what interested me in the way that Spring's work functioned is that she was invited in to do what could be maybe called a more traditional exhibition, where she would produce some work that then would be exhibited in that space. And it seems to me that through a certain resistance on her part and a renegotiation and an articulation of another range of possibilities, she started to convince a particular institution that maybe there was another way of going about working with her art. And I think that whether she, in the same way that Warren is trying to sort of account for how you evaluate the success or the long-term or ongoing impact of any of these things, I think it would probably be difficult to assess that. But I think that the fact that work existed in that particular institution, that so many people experienced it. And I really do believe in the afterlife of projects, that there is a memory, but there is a discourse, and that things continue. They have a way of mobilizing beyond the period of their existence, beyond the time of the exhibition. And so I would equate what she was doing in some ways with maybe some of the things that I think that Jennifer Fisher and Jim Drobnik are up to, in the way that they frequently utilize existing sites that are known for particular, I guess, for particular traditions of practice and of display. And they, again, I think, surprise us in the kinds of arrangements and choices and presentations and bringing together of things that they offer. Certainly within the piece they did, The Servant Problem, it seems that they occupied a site that was known as a sort of historically significant site within London, Ontario. But what they did in the way that they worked in that project, and I'm sure much to the credit of Jamili Hassan, who's I think instigated that whole project, but still what they were able to do is to point to the colonial history, to point to the notion of servitude that surrounded the existence of that collection and that building in the beginning. And I like the way that that would have maybe extended out to the larger community and to some of the issues that of shall we call it settlement or the history of that particular region. And so I think that there's ways that I see some of these interventions working almost as this kind of repressed speech that comes forward in some of these gestures or actions. And to me, in some way, that's sort of the value, I guess, of an intervention.
I'm just going to ask one more question, then I do want to see whether or not we can do something together. And it's sort of a question for both Dot and Elizabeth, which is that what was missing for me in the session yesterday morning when Melanie's question was sort of finally addressed but still not answered, which is the question that I think Judith poses for us, which is, what is the effect on practice within museums, and how does it continue within museums?